Good morning. Really enjoyed the band this morning. It was fantastic. The worship, I thought. Still more to come, I hope. Well, you don't seem very enthusiastic. Come on. Well, we're going to think this morning, we're going to consider the transfiguration, shall we say. And at 3 o'clock on Tuesday morning, in the early hours, God woke me up and he said, say this. So I hope you like it. It's the way it happens sometimes. It takes an hour to download, you know, into my brain because it's slow. It only works at a very slow megabyte rate. So. But we're going to consider the transfiguration this morning, the transfiguration of Jesus and the transfiguration of ourselves. And we find what you had read up there from the Gospel. We find it in Matthew's Gospel, Mark's Gospel, Luke's Gospel. And there are some that say it's incorporated by John into the first bit of chapter 1 of his Gospel, where he talks about Jesus being the light in different ways. Jesus, you could say, I'm going to sort of take you on a sort of, I'm going to paint a picture for you of the day here. Okay, so go along with me and see where you end up. Jesus rose from his sleep when it was still dark in the early morning, went out and prayed. As the sun came up, he called to him Peter, James and John, and he said to them, on this day we're all going up the mountain to pray. For Jesus, this was a special and exciting day. Jesus knew that this was Transfiguration Day. This was the day when he would speak to Moses and Elijah about the final arrangements for his departure from the earth, which was to happen in Jerusalem. Transfiguration Day, you see, didn't just happen when they were up a mountain. It was all in God's plan. It was in God's plan for Jesus on his journey to the cross and to the resurrection. Now this mountain where the transfiguration took place is shaped like an inverted bowl, like a pudding bowl. Alright? Huge great pudding bowl on the horizon when you look at it. And it's 1,886 feet high, or 575 metres, if you like metres. And on the top, there's a flat area, plateau area. So it's got a bowl shape with a flat area on top. Today we call it Mount Tabor. Mount Tabor has been known as the place where the transfiguration happened since the days of the very early church. So it is the place. So 11 miles of walking from Galilee to Mount Tabor, and then climbing the mountain, by the time they got to the top, it would have been about midday-ish. When I say climbing, it's like a walk up, but a very steep walk up. So what I want you to do is to imagine yourself as a disciple of Jesus. One of these disciples is going with him up the mountain. There you are in all your disciple clothes, your first century clothes, You haven't washed your hair because they didn't wash their hair. And you didn't use deodorant because it didn't have any. So you are as you were in the first century. And maybe as Jesus revealed to you the itinerary for the day when he called you to him, you'd be thinking, oh, not a mountain. Why do we always have to climb a mountain or a hill to pray? We're always doing it. It's far enough to walk to get there, let alone climbing it. On the other hand, Jesus is really keen to get there, full of expectation. He knows what's going to happen. Striding on ahead of you, perhaps, as you puff and pant, trying to keep up as he strides off ahead, and particularly when you get to the mountain. He's off, like a ferret up a drainpipe, keen to get to the top. He knows what's going to happen when he gets there. You just get dragged along. Finally, you get to the top. Tired out, very sweaty, hungry, thirsty, and hoping there's time for lunch before the praying starts. But you know, you've got to have lunch because the praying can go on for hours. And you know from experience, when you've had it before, that you're usually unable to keep up anyway and you fall asleep. Common plight for the disciples up mountains. But you're not happy because the praying starts without lunch, because Jesus is really keen. And then it happens. The world around you just dissolves. And eternity surrounds you. Your mind struggles to focus on what your eyes are seeing. You feel the full blast of the heat and light of eternity, of heaven. And you are overwhelmed. And your brain just isn't wired to cope with this reality. You're tired, you're asleep, and you're awake all at the same time. You're experiencing a moment of timelessness, a moment of transfiguration. Jesus is shining white. Such bright white light, impossibly white. His face is shining like the sun. Shining with that light that the darkness can never overcome. Jesus is transfigured. Jesus will not be like this again until the resurrection. And there with him are Moses and Elijah. And you don't know how you know who they are. You just know. Because this is so different from normal. Heaven has seeped into your being. And Jesus is talking with Moses and Elijah. How weird is that? And then you find yourself talking. Not knowing really what you're saying. Your mind trying to get you back to stability. To normality. You find yourself babbling about making three shelters for Moses, Elijah and Jesus. Not a clue what you're talking about. Or why you are. And then as if things couldn't really get any weirder. You're suddenly enveloped in a cloud. You can't see a thing. Now you're really afraid and you fall down on your face on the ground. Can't see anything. And then just as panic is really setting in, a voice speaks from the cloud. "This is my son, my chosen one. Listen to him." God has spoken directly to you. You've had a truly Moses-like encounter with God at the top of a mountain. Then as suddenly as it began, it's over. And Jesus is standing there, all alone, looking very normal, like he normally does. And he touches you and says, "Rise and have no fear." And as you gather your wits about you, and you set off with him back down the mountain, Jesus says to you, "Don't tell anyone about the vision until the Son of Man is raised from the dead." And you're left wondering what on earth he's talking about. What does raised from the dead mean? Isn't he still alive? Anyway, there's no way you're going to tell anyone about this experience. They'd think you'd really lost it. So just as Moses found in our first reading and the disciples found following Jesus, the presence of Jesus or the presence of God makes a huge difference in our lives. From the moment we are born again, born anew, born from above, we are transfigured into the children of God. We journey on in our lives and on our faith, and as the Apostle Paul puts it, we are changed from one degree of glory to another. As we follow Jesus, the transfiguration of our lives continues, and we steadily, hopefully, become more like him. So what a difference the presence of the light of life makes in our lives. Have you ever considered what a difference he's made in your life? And what a transfiguration has occurred, is occurring, and will continue to occur with Jesus in our lives. But you know, sometimes in our lives there's more. And sometimes, just like the disciples, as we journey with Jesus, we are graciously blessed with some special transfiguration type experiences. A special time when Jesus comes in and transfigures us in such a way that the direction, the whole spiritual plane on which we are working, and the spiritual level of our lives completely changes and is thrown up in the air. You could call these mountaintop experiences after what happened on Mount Tabor. Have you ever had any? Maybe you're going to have one soon. I'm going to share one that happened to me when I was 16. Just to sort of to encourage you that these things are real. When I was 16, I was praying in my bedroom in my parents' house, because I became a Christian when I was 14. And one night, out of nowhere, while I was praying, and completely unexpectedly, I had a vision of Jesus. It was overwhelming. the throne room in heaven opened up before me. And Jesus was seated on his throne. And he was truly massive. I can't describe the size. And I was looking up like a blade of grass from his feet, unable to focus all the way up, unable to focus. He was so big to see his face. All that came out of my mouth was praise. That's all my mouth could do, and all my brain seemed to contain. And like the transfiguration on the mountain, it lasted for a timeless moment, and then it was gone. And I was left completely excited, totally overwhelmed, and wondering what on earth had gone on. And in some way that I cannot explain, but from that moment onwards, I knew that Jesus wanted me to be a minister in the church. From that moment. I didn't know how, I didn't know when, I just knew that that's what Jesus wanted of me. But these experiences, they come with a warning. Because when you have them, you're really overwhelmed and excited inside. But you don't know how to tell anyone else about them. And I can remember the next day thinking, I was on a young people's trip to Southport or somewhere from where I lived in the Wirral, thinking, how do I tell everybody what has happened to me? Would they even think I was mad? And it doesn't make the journey with Jesus any easier either. Because you always have to come down from the mountain where you had the experience and back to normal life. And actually, following Jesus becomes more difficult and more demanding because you know that Jesus has got a plan for you. You just don't know how or when, and God's timing is so much different from ours. I had a long, long journey to ordination. Lots of different ministries in between. It was very frustrating and very difficult. And it wasn't until I was in my 40s that I was ordained, after knowing that that was the plan since I was 16. The transfiguration experience I had, just like the disciples, was just the start of a journey that Jesus had planned for me. And he was often striding on ahead, saying, come on, keep up. Where are you? Aren't you excited enough? Keep up. The presence of Jesus in our lives is hugely significant. It changes us for all eternity. We often don't realize how significant the transfiguration in us is. We must follow him and seek to be as much like him as we can. Because only Jesus knows. But he may have a special time of transfiguration for you. And I encourage you to ask him and to seek him for that with all your heart. To direct you in the way that he wants you to go. We must earnestly seek to follow Jesus and to be like him. As we open the door of our lives wider and wider and let him in, then we will be transfigured in ways that we couldn't possibly expect or imagine. Amen.